Welcome to Book Bistro, where book enthusiasts come to chat about the books they love in a warm and supportive environment. Today is March 6th, 2024. This is Shannon, and tonight I'm here with Brooke, Natalia, and Stacy, and we are talking about female authors who are new to us. So some of these may be debut authors, but some of them may not. Some of them have actually been writing for quite a while, and for whatever reason, we have just discovered their work. So we are going to get started with the usual housekeeping information. Then Natalia will start us off, followed by Brooke, me, and last will be Stacy.
You can find us on Facebook by searching for Book Bistro Podcast. There we have our usual Facebook page where we keep track of our Wednesday reads and also post information about the Friday episodes. We also have a Facebook listener group that you're welcome to join. And if you prefer a different type of listener group, you can contact us and ask about our WhatsApp group. Both groups are pretty small, not super high traffic, and we would love to have you. If you want to get in touch with us off of social media, you can do so by sending an email to thebookbistropodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for our main hosting page, where you can find information on the podcatchers that make Book Bistro available to you, you can find that information in our show notes.
All right, I'm first for a change, or maybe not anymore. So the first book I'm going to talk about tonight is called All You Have to Do by Carrie Mayer, recommended by our dear Fuggleman Shannon. And I guess it's somewhat of a historical, and it takes place in the early 1970s. And in the early 1970s, who did a girl call if she needed help? Well, Jane. And in Chicago, the best known secret of the city is Jane, which is a women's health organization. It's actually not a person. And it's composed of women who are helping women. And it's contrary to the expectations of women of the time by society and their families. And the book is primarily about a few characters, one of which is Veronica, who's the founder of Jane. And she prides herself in the services that she's provided to thousands of women. But the price of others' freedom means that she leads a double life. And when she's not at Jane, Veronica plays the role of a conventional housewife. And well, that becomes even more difficult when she becomes pregnant. And her very wanted child is a very high risk pregnancy. And that kind of makes it a little difficult to, you know, pregnancy is exhausting enough when you're living a single life. So imagine living two completely separate lives that cannot interconnect in any way. And that's, you know, that's what Veronica's doing. And there are two other women in the story that live in Veronica's neighborhood as well. And they're grappling with similar disconnects from their, I guess, public lives. There's Margaret, who is a young professor at the University of Chicago. And she's a secret volunteer for Jane. And she starts falling for a man whose attitudes for his ex-wife is very disturbing to her. Then we have Patty. And Patty is very incontent. Even though she's a devoted wife and mother, she's not very happy with her life. But she's also begun to sense that something essential is going on in her neighborhood with the women that she knows that she's not privy to. And when her runaway younger sister, Eliza, shows up unexpectedly, it kind of changes everything for her. And Patty is forced to come to terms with what it really means to love and support a sister. And well, this is a fictional account of a moment that was really historical and really political for many, many reasons. And television and movies, commercials, everything was basically telling women that they'd come a long way. But Veronica, Margaret, and Patty must make choices that will change the course of their lives and the life of other women forever. So this is All You Have to Do Is Call by Carrie Mayer. And one really great thing about this book is that I went into it not knowing anything about it, not knowing what it was about, not knowing anything. And it grabbed me from the first page all the way till the end. And I think it's one of those books that everybody can relate to, find something to relate to, and if not, find something to understand the experiences that other people, women especially, lived at that time. And, it's interesting to me that we can still relate to experiences women had in the 70s. That could be great and it could be terrible too. But if you want to read a really nice historical that will keep you intrigued the whole way through, you want to read this book.
I loved this so much. I've read, she wrote The Girl in White Gloves like back in 2020, which I really liked. And she has
I
a
have to
couple
read
of other
that.
books as well, but she's just an incredible author, and I think this was far and away like her best book so far.
So my first book is by a this is actually her debut. This is Before We Came, Lakes Hockey, Book One, and it's by Sloane St. James. So our main character's name is Birdie, and when we join Birdie, or her adopted mother has just passed away, and at this point, Birdie starts learning things about her adopted mother and about herself that kind of like turn her life upside down. So she learns that she was actually not adopted. She was taken away from her family. And I'm not going to tell
Oh.
you like how this all is because I don't want to give it away. But she starts learning, trying to figure out like where is her family, and she wants to know more. Like all growing up, she'd always known she was adopted. Her adopted mom would always tell her that like you were adopted because I adopted you because your family gave you up because you were a lot of trouble and nobody wanted you. And she was just a really horrible person, like all her life growing up. Like Birdie tried really hard to make her mother happy, like her adopted mother happy, but like just nothing ever was happy. Thankfully, she had her best friend that was always by her side and helping her and kind of like sticking up for her and stuff like that. So her and her friend start kind of looking into things, and she decides to put her DNA into an ancestry thing, and some matches come back. So then she decides that she's going to do some research and find this family. So she heads off to Minnesota. And in Minnesota, she stops in Minneapolis. And at Minneapolis, she's at the hotel just hanging out. And she's having like a drink at the bar. And she's kind of trying to decide now that she's in Minnesota, does she really, really want to go to her family's doorstep and say like, hey, like here I am. Like, does she want to open this Pandora's box, or would she like, is she happy just leaving alone? And just kind of now that she's free, because her adoptive mom is gone, now that she's kind of free to do her own thing, like, is it like, does she really want to open this? So she's having her drink, and she meets this guy, and they go up to her his hotel room, and they have a fling. And then they kind of separate that the next morning, and that's it. So she heads off to her family, and she connects with her mom first, and she learned like her mom was so excited, like totally excited to see her, and the family like brings her right into the fold right away. Like, there's just certain things that at first, like, her brother's a little unsure, because it's been, I think she was taken when she was about like 7 years old. So it's been a really long time. That's about, and I think she's in her 20s now. So it's been a really long time, but there's just certain things that she's starting to remember by talking to them. And then one of a family friend, so her brother's friend, and comes over, and his name is Lonin. And guess what? Lonin is the guy that she had the fling with at the hotel. So makes it a little bit uncomfortable, but Lonin is so excited to learn that Birdie is back, because he knew Birdie growing up, and him and Birdie always had the greatest like friendship. And he had a little crush on her. He's a little older than her, so obviously he wouldn't have acted upon it back then. But after their little rendezvous a few days prior, he realizes that, like, he wants to learn more about her. So he starts to get to know her, and somehow her story leaks to the press. And now reporters are on their doorstep. So she needs somewhere to hide. So he offers to have her come to his penthouse and stay with him, because he's got a doorman and everything that kind of keep her safe and to keep her hidden. So she goes and she stays with him, and she helps him out with some things. Like, she agrees to make him food, so to be a chef, because that's kind of what she's went to school for and what she really wants to be. And like, being a hockey player, he needs to have a better diet. So the nutritionists have been trying to do that. So she offers to be, if he, so that she can work. She doesn't want to like live off of him. She says, I'll make your meals and help you with your nutrition. And then you, in exchange, I can stay at your place. So she does that. And as the book goes along, like, she's slowly getting to know her family again. Her and Lonin are reconnecting. And you're really seeing her kind of coming out of her shell. And at the same time, she's struggling, because she's struggling with trust. So you'll see there's a bit of trust issues, because she's just never had anyone other than her best friend to that she can trust, because not even could she trust her adopted mom. So there's a lot of kind of like wishy-washy, not knowing what she wants to do. Does she want to like stay in Minnesota with her family? Does she want to head back to Vancouver where she was living? Like, just all these decisions she's got to make, and try to decide, like, now that she is free to do what she wants to do, like, what does she want to do? So if you would like to learn more about Birdie and Lonin, then you will need to check out Before We Came, Lakes Hockey, Book One by Sloane St. James. And this was so, so good. Like, I really, really, really enjoyed this book.
So it's time to talk about outlaws. Female outlaws. So this is Heresy by Melissa Lenhart. And she's been writing for quite a while. She's an author that I've kind of been aware of. I've had some books of hers on my TBR pile, but I never actually picked one of her books up until I was just going through some stuff at my public library, and I saw this one and grabbed it. So this is about a gang of female outlaws who were responsible for a bunch of robberies from 1873 to 1877. And one of the first things about this book that I think you need to know is that the narrative structure is a little different. So sometimes we're reading things from like someone's journal. Sometimes we're going like forward in time, and we're reading interviews that were conducted. So this is kind of a mishmash of like opinions and like points of view. And at first I wondered if it was going to be like very disorganized and hard to follow, but it really, really wasn't. And I think it, like, reading it is kind of like an oral history, especially if you do it as an audiobook. So we have Margaret Parker
and Patty LaCour, and they are sort of the heads of this gang. And you learn about their histories as the book goes on. So I'm not going to get into like too much of their backstories, but they each have their own reasons for being kind of brought into this gang. And it is through their power and perseverance and willingness to take all kinds of risks, like sometimes to their own detriment, especially Margaret, that this gang sort of thrives. But in 1877, lots of things begin to go wrong. And when that happens, they have one sort of final job that they think they need to pull off. And if they can do this, Margaret feels like they'll get the notoriety they deserve. Now, I'm not sure that notoriety is something you should want when you're an outlaw, because with notoriety comes like the authorities, and that might be bad for you. But she really resents the fact that newspapers and just like, you know, word of mouth don't give her the credit that she thinks she deserves for all these heists that she's pulled off. So she's hoping that through this one job, like she will finally make a name for herself and nobody will be able to deny her. Now, this, you know, doesn't quite work out the way she plans, and I'm not going to tell you why or how, but it really calls into question a lot of what is keeping this gang together. There are secrets that the women are keeping from one another. There are some kind of loyalties that are tested. It is just an incredible book. And one of my favorite things about it is the fact that it is a Western told from a female perspective, which I don't think we get very many of these. You know, people talk a lot about Westerns and we, you know, we read about cowboys and we don't often get the perspective of women living on their own, trying to survive in the harsh landscape of the West. And that is where this book really, really shines. It is, say, a longer read. I read it in audio and it's almost 15 hours long. So not, you know, incredible, not like a Diana Gabaldon book where you're, you know, going to be reading it for 40 hours, but definitely, you know, a book you can sink into and get lost in for a while. So this is Heresy by Melissa Lenhart.
I feel like people aren't writing enough of these like gritty Westerns like they it's used true. To. So it probably has some like nostalgia feel to it in addition to like having the like the more feminine perspective. I think it looks like that'd be interesting to read.
Yeah, it's very, very cool.
I'll definitely be adding this to my TBR. It sounds really, really, really interesting.
My first book of the evening has a title that made me almost not give it a glance because I thought it had a silly title, but it's called Mother Faker, and it is The Mom Coms Book One, and it's by Brittany Nicole. And just everything about this, I'm like, oh, it's about moms. It's by an author I don't know. It has a weird name. But for whatever reason, I saw that when it came out in audio, I really liked the narrator. So I'm like, I'm just going to look at it and see, you know, if it's worth my time. And I'm really happy I did. This book is about four friends who met in college and have remained close for the last 15 years. And whenever they can, they get together for a girls' trip. And they just sort of like unwind together and kind of rehash everything and catch up. They don't all live in the same place. So it's like their time to get together and reconnect. Well, this year, wouldn't you know, they're supposed to go to wine country in California and have this lovely kind of spa feeling trip. But at the last minute, Liv, who is the main character of this story, is contacted by her pain in the butt boss, grumpy, overbearing boss, and he said he needs her for a deal that he's trying to do to get this he is the owner of some sports teams in Boston, and he's trying to get her to go to his estate in Florida for the weekend to help woo this potential new client. And so Liv ends up bringing all of her friends to his estate for their girls' trip. And each of them, all four friends, are going to this, you know, weekend with secrets from each other. They all have things that they don't really want to talk about, painful things or stressful things that they don't want to share with each other. And over the course of the weekend, they start kind of, you know, mellowing out. And to sound like I'm on The Bachelor, they let their walls down a little bit and they start talking to each other and find out each of them are in this position where they're all sort of at a crossroads in their lives. And one of them owns a falling down, crumbling old brownstone in Boston that was willed to her. And over many glasses of wine, they decide that what's going to happen is all four of them with their children are going to move into this brownstone together, begin rehabbing it together, and they're going to bring all their children, which totals seven, and they're going to form a mom community. So when I saw mom-com, I thought it meant like rom-com, but mom-com, but it actually means mom community. And they're going to live there together and they're going to help each other out because they all need support and they're going to provide that for each other. Well, as I said, Liv, who is the focus of this book, is here in Florida because her boss basically said he just couldn't be without her this weekend. He really needed her. And, you know, then we kind of advance in time. They're all living together in this completely disreputable wreck of a gorgeous old brownstone. And her boss, Beckett Langfield, continues to be very bossy. But one night they sort of end up accidentally getting married after an alcohol laden evening on one of their work trips together. Liv is an assistant for his company, not him specifically, but for his company. And she wakes up the next morning and she's like, holy hell, I'm in bed with my boss. And it appears that we are married in Vegas, of course. Well, a lot of things have been going wrong for Beckett. He has been tarnishing his reputation. He's a workaholic. He doesn't have a lot of patience. He's sort of a buttoned up, stick up his behind type of person. And he also has, unfortunately, sort of acquired a reputation as a kid hater. And this hasn't been doing good things for him in terms of the different sports teams that he manages. And so Beckett asks Liv, like, if they could remain in this marriage, like in a sort of faking capacity, which is like my favorite thing in the history of ever. And he will help by financially assisting with beginning to kind of renovate and rehab this brownstone. And she will help by rehabbing his reputation by letting him be seen with her children. And it's a very businesslike arrangement until it isn't. And he ends up moving into this brownstone and into this very chaotic blended family unit of all these very strong personalities, very strong women, and all of their children. And it, sort of against his will almost, he kind of gets sucked into the various, you know, things that are going on within the house. And he is drawn to the different children for various reasons, but particularly he's drawn to Liv and her kids. And Liv did not believe in any sort of like happily ever after for her at this point. She's just gone through a rough divorce. She has two young kids. She's kind of single momming it. And, you know, she doesn't need this like uptight billionaire boss to kind of come in and start like, you know, rearranging her life in some ways. But, you know, the universe or her friends or some of the animal life that lives in the house might have other ideas for Liv and Beckett and the type of marriage that they have. This book is a rom-com, but it's also, it has a lot of heart and depth to it. It's a lot about strong, enduring female friendships that kind of have lasted through, you know, different kind of life phases for all of these women. And what I love about this series is it's an interconnected series of four books about the four friends, but they're all written by different authors. And I haven't read anything by any of the four authors before. So it's a great way to discover new writing talent and to read books that are just delightful. I laughed out loud multiple times, and it was a wonderful book. And Brittany Nicole is a really, really great author, and I'm looking forward to reading more of what she's done. So this is Mother Faker, the Mom Coms Book One by Brittany Nicole. And if you enjoy reading audiobooks, it is very skillfully and delightfully narrated by Maxine Mitchell and Joe Arden, who are two of the absolute best and really elevated the experience.
I am totally adding this. This sounds so,
It's
so good.
delightful. It is so quirky and delightful and laugh out loud and more depth than you would think. It's all the things.
Well, my next book, this is actually a new author to me. She's known for writing The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, I believe.
Oh.
But I actually had never read her. This is One True Loves by Taylor Jenkins Reid. Oh my God. And that book, wow. I went in not knowing what it was about either. So this is about Emma Blair, who marries her high school sweetheart in her 20s, Jesse. And they build a life for themselves completely different from the expectation of their parents, and they're very happy together. They travel the world together. They move away from Massachusetts, their hometown. So, I married my high school sweetheart, and I lived in Massachusetts for a while. So even if I had read this synopsis, I would have loved it already, but I didn't know all this when I started this book. But anyway, they were very much about living life for the fullest, being very in love, being young, married, and seeing everything they wanted to see of the world and having, an adventurous life. I actually know a couple like that. But what happened on their first wedding anniversary? Jesse is on a helicopter over the Pacific when it goes missing. And just like that, Jesse's gone forever. So it completely changes Emma's life. She quits her job. She moves home to try and put her life back together. The grief is incredible. And well, years later in her 30s, Emma runs into an old friend from high school, Sam, and finds herself falling in love again. And when Emma and Sam get engaged, it seems like it's her final chance at happiness. That is, well, until Jesse is found. He's alive and he's been trying all these years to come home to her. So now Emma has not only a fiance who she loves very much, but a husband who she thought dead. And well, now Emma has to figure out who she is and what she wants while trying to protect all the people she loves. Who is her one true love and what does it mean to love truly? Emma knows she has to listen to her heart, but she's not sure what it's saying. I'm going to start by saying that I hate love triangles. I will read books with love triangles because there are books that are very good that have them. And I will tell you that this is not what this is at all. I know it sounds like it, but this book really is so deep. And I love that. I mean, if you read this book, you will feel everything with Emma. And Sam and Jesse and whatever you think is the answer to the question of what does it mean to love truly is not what you're going to think when you finish this book. It will change your life and it will change your outlook on a lot of stuff. And man, sometimes in life stuff just happens. So if you want a book like that, that's going to keep you there, and it is suspenseful, but in an emotional way, not so much like who killed her, who done it. Kind of way, if that makes sense. And if you're in the mood for that kind of read, this is the book for you. And go into it. You know what it's about, unlike me. But I actually read this book in one sitting. I just could not stop reading this book. So if you pick it up, I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. This is One True Loves by Taylor Jenkins Reid. And I have to like go read The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo because
Oh gosh. Yes. Yes, The Seven Husbands is, I think, one of the best books I've ever read.
Wow.
And Taylor Jenkins Reid has an amazing gift with words. I think there's just
Yes.
something very, very special about the way she writes. I've read
I think four of her books so far, and they're
You read
all
this one?
very different. No, not this, not yet. They're all very different from one another, but very deep and moving in like in their own ways.
So my next book this evening is Nectar of the Wicked, Deadly Divine Duet, Book One. So our main character's name is Flea, and we will learn later what her true name is, because at this point in the book, she doesn't even know that she has a name. Her guardian gave her the name of Flea, and I'm
That's a
putting.
terrible name.
I know. I put guardian in quotes because she wasn't the greatest guardian, caretaker, or anything. So Flea and her guardian have gone to meet with the Wild Hunt, and they come every, I guess every year, and they come to do something in the town. And so her guardian wants to take Flea and trade her, she's a changeling, and trade her for to get her human daughter back. She thinks that so Flea is now 20 years old, so she's decided that it's time that she's done everything she's supposed to do, so it's time that Flea goes and she gets her daughter back. So things happen, and her guardian ends up dead. So now Flea is stuck trying to figure out like what is she gonna do? Where is she gonna go? How's she gonna care for herself? And not only was her guardian not the greatest person, but she's also left behind a lot of debts that Flea must now take care of. This town that I didn't mention is called like the Middle. So it's where kind of like the border between the Fey lands and the human lands. She is now forced to go and work for this pleasure room. I can't remember what it's called, but she goes up to her first appointment and she meets this f man who's a fairy, and his name is, we learn that his name is Florian. And they kind of get to know each other, chat, they do their thing. He moves on, and then he gets her to come back another day for another situation. He has to get married, so he wants her to agree, do a blood bond, to agree to marry her, and then he will help her get to fairy and discover her past and find out like where is she from, who is she, like why was she sent to this in between area. So she heads off to fairy with Florian, and at this point we don't know why Florian is doing this for Flea. We don't really like, we don't know his motivations. You have a feeling that it's not all because he wants to be nice. And we know that it's definitely not because it's not fully because he has to be married and stuff. There's a whole reasoning behind it. And as the book goes along, you start to realize that that Flea is now in the middle of this whole political and, like there's these different groups that she's now in the middle of. And we start learning about Flea, and we learn like about her situation, and we learn who she is. And I know this is so vague, but I also don't, I can't give things away because that wouldn't be very nice. When we first meet Flea, she's very naive, she's very sheltered, as you could only imagine. And she doesn't really know a lot, but like as the book goes along, and then when we get to book two, you really see her come out of her shell, and you see her come into her own, which is really cool. So she, at the beginning, like Florian and everyone is kind of telling her what to do, and she's obeying. But as the book goes along, and then when we get into book two, she really starts standing up for herself. and she starts creating boundaries. And it's really neat to see her come into her own. This book ends on a cliffhanger, which thankfully book two is out. And we learn like who she is, and we learn like who her family was in Faerie, and we learn like why she was sent away. But then, so one thing with this book is it's a very dark romance. So if you're not very comfortable with some dark situations, then I definitely wouldn't read it. There's a whole list of trigger warnings that I can't completely remember everything for. So I would definitely, if you have certain like triggers that bother you, then I would definitely read this list to make sure. But there's definitely some pretty tough situations that Flea gets into. But generally, like, I really, really, like, I enjoyed this book. I quite liked it. So this is Nectar of the Wicked, Deadly Divine Duet, Book One by Ella Fields.
Wow. I'm going to have to take a look at this. My next book is written by a person who finally showed me that I could read cozy mysteries without hating them.
Stop.
She writes the Tita Rosie's Kitchen Mystery series. So this is Arsenic and Adobo. And again, this is the first book in that series, and it's by Mia P. Manansala. And I interviewed her for the podcast last year and really enjoyed talking with her, but I hadn't actually read her books. And she told me something in the interview, and I think I've said it here before, but she told me during the interview that cozy mysteries are just rom-coms with dead bodies. And that worked for me so well. And so finally, this year, I picked up this first book in her series and was utterly enchanted. And I have, you know, taken a chance on some other cozies now, based on sort of her recommendation and her kind of changing the way I view this particular subgenre. So this is about Lila, and she has had to return home after she suffered a really bad breakup. Her life kind of fell apart. And so she returns home, and she is now supposed to save her aunt's restaurant. Her aunt owns this classic, like, Filipino eatery, but they're starting to have some problems. Cash flow isn't so good. You know, their restaurant just isn't quite as busy as it once was. And even though the food is really great, there's just something missing. So when Lila comes home, they decide that she is the perfect person to save the restaurant. And she's kind of okay with that. She feels like she doesn't really know what else she's going to do with her life at this point. So, okay, if she can help out her family, you know, nothing wrong with that. But then her Tita Rosie, who owns the restaurant, gets into kind of a tiff with this really nasty food critic. And when he is found dead the next day, Rosie is thought to be the prime suspect. And it doesn't matter what Lila tells people, you know, what like information she gives the police. It seems like they just keep looking at Rosie. And so Lila decides that the only thing she can do is to run an investigation of her own, which of course, you know, in real life would never ever work, but works really nicely in a book like this. And so she starts digging into things going on kind of behind the scenes in the town and asking questions about Rosie's long-standing feud with this particular food critic. And she uncovers some things that do manage to make a difference in the investigation. Obviously, I'm not going to tell you what she discovers or how they make a difference,
But this was just a really great start to a series. I will definitely be continuing this. There are four books out so far, and I am hoping that she keeps this going because I did really, really enjoy it. This is Arsenic and Adobo, Tita Rosie's Kitchen Mysteries, Book One by Mia P. Manansala.
This looks delightful, and I'm betting there are some great descriptions of food,
There are.
which you know is my thing.
Yes.
My second book of the evening is a book that I've talked about on the podcast before, because it was such a happy surprise to me, and that is Say You'll Be Mine by Naina Kumar.
Yay.
And I love this book. It's like one of those books that feels like the perfect book hug. It's lovely. It's just all the things, and it's also a fake dating rom-com, which you know I love so much,
Yes.
especially when done well. This book is about Meghna, and Meghna is a teacher. She teaches English, but also she does some sort of drama work on the side for a high school in Texas. And Meghna is sort of living this life where she feels a lot like she might be a disappointment to her parents. Her parents are from India, and they have just high expectations of themselves and of their children. And Meghna's brother did exactly what was expected of him. He became an engineer, and he's living this, high-profiled sort of like, he's on the perfect track in terms of what his parents feel he should be doing. But Meghna, that's not her passion. She didn't want to be an engineer, so she's teaching English, but her true passion is writing, and that's what she really, really wants to do. But for right now, teaching is fine. And she's doing okay with her life. Things are fine until she discovers that her best friend and the guy she's actually hardcore crushed on since college, Seth, she finds out that he's getting married, but it's not to her. It's to somebody else that Meghna has never even really heard about before. And to kind of add insult to injury, Seth wants her to be his best man in his wedding. And Meghna is just brokenhearted by the whole thing. She just, she doesn't understand like where things went so wrong with Seth. Like she's, he's her critique partner. He reads all of her writing, and he is a he is a songwriter, and she, also reads his songs and helps him out a lot in terms of like if she thinks a different word or phrase would work better. So she's his critique partner as well. And this has been going on for like almost 10 years. But now she feels like, she's going to have to figure out how to be okay supporting Seth while he marries someone he's in love with who isn't her. At the same time, Meghna's mother really would like her to meet this guy that she and this other mother think would be a good match for Meghna. And as she's thinking about Seth's upcoming wedding and the, the looming plus one and just all of that, she thinks, well, maybe like I can meet this guy. Like maybe there'll be a spark. And plus, she wants to please her parents. And this guy is an engineer, so he's everything that her parents hope for her. Let's talk about Karthik. He lives in New York with his lovely mother and complete dickbag of a father. And he completely is living this life that is just, he doesn't want anything to do that associates him with his father. So he is an engineer, but he's not super passionate about it, but it's something that, is necessary. And he's just this very buttoned up, rule following by the book, doesn't have a lot of fun or friends kind of person. And when he meets Meghna, she is just so very different from who he is. And the two decide that it would be a beneficial arrangement for them to fake date. For her, it would get her the ability to have somebody act as her plus one during all of Seth's wedding festivities. And for Karthik, not only will it help him, he's hoping to get a promotion, and they kind of are wanting him to look like he's on the family track at his job, which to me sounds like discrimination, but whatevs. But also it will get his mother off his back. If he dates Meghna, then she won't try to, you know, put forth any other match prospects for him for the next year, I believe. And so the two of them kind of embark upon this sort of long distance arranged fake engagement where they kind of fly between New York and Texas, and they kind of go to these different, you know, festivities with each other. And it's just, it's kind of awkward, and they don't really mesh at first. You know, they don't really understand each other and their different personalities, but the more time that they spend together, the more that they both kind of see, like, you know, there's more than we thought. They start feeling a little bit protective of each other and more supportive of each other. And there's kind of buy-in on both sides to this sort of fake relationship. And, you know, Karthik is there when Meghna is planning Seth's bachelor party, where, thank you very much, she has to go and be his, like, you know, party planner. And, you know, she is there, like, when he's in New York and at these different get-togethers he has to deal with for work, but also being around his lovely mother and complete horrible waste of space father. And like I said, the more time they spend together, the more they kind of begin, sort of in their subliminal way, wondering if, like, maybe what they're feeling for each other may not be as fake as they both kind of assumed. This is a lovely book. It is a rom-com, but it has, again, like, I know I say this a lot, but it has a lot of heart and depth. And the writing is just gorgeous. You would not know this was a debut novel for someone. It was just the whole thing from start to finish, the pacing, just everything was perfection. And it's just a story that kind of explores both familial expectations, but also what someone needs in order to be supported, in order to kind of follow their true calling and their dreams in life. This again is Say You'll Be Mine by Naina Kumar. And this is an author that I will read. I mean, I wish she could just, like, keep writing and writing and put out piles of books, like, in a very short amount of time, because I would read anything that she writes.
I read this just a little bit after you did, and I loved it so much.
I love this book. Of course, I'm going to love a book about somebody auditioning for a singing competition. Yes. Now this book, I started it before bed, and so I didn't sleep that night. And this is a new to me author. I'm sure Shannon has mentioned it, and I don't know why it took me so long to read it. No reason at all. Maybe I have no idea, but man, was it worth the wait. So this is I'll Be the One, and this book is by Lila Lee, and it's a book about body positivity and in the world of K-pop, something I know nothing about in real life. But this is about Sky Shin, who has heard it all. She's heard that fat girls should not dance, should not wear bright colors, should not call attention to themselves. But there's a problem with this. Sky has a dream of joining the glittering world of K-pop. And to do that, she's about to break all the rules that society have set on girls like her. And not only has society set these rules for her, but the media and even her own mother, which is rough. And, well, she's extraordinarily talented and confident to go with it, so why not? And so she decides that she's going to challenge thousands of other performers in an internationally televised competition looking for the next K-pop star, and she'll do it better than anyone else. So, well, Sky auditions for this contest and she nails it, but she's immediately swept into the whirlwind of singing contests that are televised, which is lots of practicing, shocking performances, and the mega drama that comes with reality TV, some of which we get to see when we watch these kinds of shows and some of which happens behind the scenes. But what she doesn't count on are the highly phobic beauty standards of the Korean pop entertainment industry, her sudden media fame and consequent scrutiny, end or the sparks that soon fly between her and her fellow competitor, Henry Chu, who is already famous in his own right. But, well, Sky really has her sights on becoming the world's first plus-sized K-pop star. And that means winning the competition without losing herself. So this is I'll Be the One by Lila Lee. And as somebody who was a 17-year-old in a singing reality TV competition, I can tell you that those competitions make it really hard not to lose yourself. And this was such a amazing take on, well, not only a world I didn't know anything about, but also a world I had experience with. So it did take me back some. But it was just so amazing to read about somebody so young and so full of light that was just believed in herself no matter what and was going to, you know, go for what she wanted. And, you know, I feel like this book taught me that bravery really means not that you're not afraid, not that you don't feel insecure, and not that you don't feel discouraged, but that you do it anyway.
This is such an incredible, incredible book. I think it shines a light on a lot of things that we don't always pay enough attention to. I think especially in a world that is pretty caught up in reality TV and all of its, you know, kind of glamour and drama. But I love Sky as a heroine. And I kind of wished that, you know, when I was 17, I could have been like quite as gutsy as she was.
So my last book this evening is Behind the Net, Vancouver Storm, Book One by Stephanie Archer. So our main character's name is Pippa. And Pippa is having a bit of a rough time. She was in the music industry and her ex did some things to her that caused her difficulties. They're obviously no longer together. And so she headed back to stay with her family. And so she's been living with her sister, Hazel, and just trying to figure out what she wants to do. So her sister, Hazel, works as a physiotherapist for the Vancouver Storm. And she's heard that some of the hockey players will get personal assistance. So she's tells Pippa that Jamie is looking for a personal assistant and that she thinks that she would really enjoy it. So Pippa heads to Jamie's apartment to let him know that she's going to be his personal assistant and to figure out like what he wants. So he opens the door and who should it be? But she didn't realize this is a guy that she knew in high school that she had a crush on. So that makes it a little bit awkward, like just by how he's kind of talking to her. She doesn't think that Jamie remembers her. So she doesn't really mention that she used to know him. So one of her jobs, which I love his, he found a stray that he takes in, and part of one of her jobs is to take care of Daisy. So she gives him, at the point when we first meet Pippa, Jamie hasn't named his dog, but she names her Daisy. So she has different little, like she takes Daisy all over the place and takes her for walks and does all these things. And then we also get the perspective of Jamie, and Jamie actually does remember Pippa. But he doesn't know if she remembers him from high school. So he kind of just plays it cool. And he's also has the pressure of making sure that he does really well because he has just been traded to the Vancouver Storm. He's their goalie. He moved there from his last franchise because his mom has problems with panic attacks, And he's really, really worried about her. So he wants to be close to be able to take care of her. So he's a really, really, like, he's always worried about everyone around him. So he's got all this pressure on him. Now he has this added pressure of this attraction to Pippa, because as he gets to know her, he realizes that this crush that he had back in high school, well, it's still there. So she, this is kind of a funny part, he decides that he's going to fire her. So he fires her over texting, which is so annoying. I hate when people do things like that. And then she is totally crushed and she's really upset about this, but she has a talk with her sister and she tells her sister, like, I need this job. Like, I really need this job. So I'm gonna bake some cupcakes and I'm gonna take him cupcakes and I'm going to demand he give me my job back. So she shows up on his doorstep and with cupcakes, and they have this like little kind of witty banter back and forth, and she ends up getting rehired and they start to get to know each other. He doesn't think that he can just let her go. There's some little hiccups along the way. There's some situations that he runs into with his mom that makes him wonder, like, if he has space for Pippa. And it's really, really, really cute to see the relationship that Pippa develops with his mom. On the Pippa side, he knows that she loves to sing, that she wants to be back into music. And she's afraid because she was kind of like crushed by her ex. She wrote a song with him and then he told her that it was crap and then ended up releasing it with another woman. So that really, really crushed her. So through the book, Jamie works to help her kind of get past her fears and to kind of shoot for what she wants, instead of just kind of playing it safe and going for what her family, like what not her family, but her parents, what her parents just want the best for her. They kind of struggled when they were younger, and they don't want their daughters to struggle. So they just want them to be happy. And so they want Pippa just not, they don't know that Pippa will be happy in the music world. So they just want her to be happy. So Jamie's able to help her get past all this and to kind of prove to her parents that the music world is where she wants to be. If you want to learn more about Pippa and Jamie and kind of see like where do they go, then you will have to check out Behind the Net, Vancouver Storm, Book One by Stephanie Archer.
So funny enough, this was the Audible Daily Deal, like either Monday or Tuesday of this week. I think it was
Oh,
Monday.
cool.
And I bought it. Like, I didn't know you were going to talk about it. I've never read anything by this author, but now I'm excited to read it because you just talked all about the synopsis and it looks like there's a whole series. So if I enjoy this, I think
Yeah,
there's
there's
more.
a book too.
So I had a few options for my last book tonight, and they all kind of depended on whether Natalia ended up talking about the book that I'm about to talk about. So she didn't, which means I'm going to. So this is The Night of the Storm by Nishita Parikh. This is a debut novel. It is a locked room mystery set in
Ooh.
Houston during Hurricane Harvey. So our main character is Gia, and she's a single mom, recently divorced, and really struggling. Her apartment complex is a mess. Her car is always breaking down. She just feels like she's one step away from disaster all the time. Her son is 12, and he really misses his dad, and his relationship with Gia is a little strained. He just got suspended from school for getting into a fight. And Gia's just kind of at her wit's end. And then, because, all that isn't enough, a hurricane is coming. And her apartment complex needs to be evacuated. Like, everybody's leaving Houston. She doesn't know what to do. Now, her sister, Seema, is pretty much the opposite of Gia. in every way. At least that's what Gia thinks. She has this perfect life, a fantastic husband, a young daughter who is just like meeting all of her milestones and doing everything right. And Gia feels like she can't measure up. Like, it just doesn't matter what she does. She's never going to be good enough. And now Sima has said that Gia can come and wait out the storm in her gorgeous house. And Gia goes because she doesn't really have anywhere else to go. You know, she can't stay in her apartment building, which is being evacuated. And where else is she going to go? So they're waiting there, and other family members start showing up. And there just starts to be a lot of drama, like just interpersonal drama that can happen, you know, in families, especially I think when there's a crisis, everything just kind of comes to a head. But hopefully this next part doesn't usually happen because someone ends up dead. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking like, yeah, I'm kind of thinking my family is pretty good at some drama, but no one's ever died because of it. And that's
same here.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. But now someone's dead. I'm not going to tell you who, but they are. And Gia's like, wait, you know, is this an accident? Like, how did this happen? And if it wasn't an accident, like, what if it happens again? Like, what if, you know, the person who killed them, like, what if they decide to kill somebody else? Like, this cannot be good. So she is trying to figure out who is responsible. Like, is this a murder? And then, of course, she's trying to, you know, keep herself and her son safe from the storm. And there's just a whole lot. This book is one of those things where, like, the action never really stops. You're just going, going, going from the time you pick up the book till the time it ends. And it is just a definite thrill ride. You know, you kind of feel bad for Gia because it always just seems like she can't win. You know, there's just so much stuff going on, and it seems like no matter what she does, it just doesn't end up the way she intended it to. And, you know, that's hard. I have sometimes felt like I've been in that position, and, you know, that's not a position you want to be in. So she's just a really relatable heroine. I thought the mystery portion of this was very, very well done. And it was just a fantastic debut. I will definitely be keeping an eye out for more of Perrick's writing because she's just amazing. So this, once again, is The Night of the Storm, and it's by Nishita Perrick.
This sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
So I must have some sort of theme. And I didn't even think about this when I was choosing my books tonight. I was actually choosing my books based on like author voice and, you know, new authors that really made an impact on me. But what I didn't sort of foresee until I was actually in the middle of talking about the Nana Kumar book that I just talked about is that all three of my books have the trope in common of fake relationships or fake engagement. So cool. That was not intentional, but I do really enjoy this trope, so I'm fine with it. So my final book tonight is What Hurts Us, Falls Creek Book One by Maggie Gates. And this book was an unexpected treasure to me. It was just delightful. It's like a small town rom-com, and those can be hit or miss for me. But I was really intrigued by the premise of this book because it's about a heroine who does a job that I've never read about before. Our heroine is this lovely, lovely young woman named Layla. And Layla is a flight nurse, an emergency flight nurse. So what she does, she's the person on like the life flight, like the person that gets people to the hospital if they need to be flown in, you know, quickly. She's one of the nurses that does this. And like, I know this exists. Like, I know that like, if you're, you know, having some sort of injury or traumatic illness episode that you can be flown to a different hospital, but I never really thought about the logistics of this job until I read this book. So I really enjoyed that aspect. So Layla is new in the small town of Falls Creek, North Carolina, and it's a really weird, strange little town. that appears to be very gossipy, but Layla is just sort of like doing her job. She moved there because she just got her heart broken, but also because she's close to one of her aunts who runs a bed and breakfast in town, and closer to her family who doesn't live, you know, very far away. I think like an hour away from where she is now. And she just feels like being around family will kind of help her to mend her heart. And also she's just gotten all of her certifications so she can be a flight nurse. So now Layla is in this little town, and early in her career here in Falls Creek, she is called to a car accident where one of the people involved is one of the police officers of the town. And Callum hurt himself pretty badly. He broke his leg. He had to be, they had to use the jaws of life to get him out of his car. The whole car accident was caused by a wayward cow on the road. And so now Cal is going off to the hospital, and he's going to be flown there. And because of the pain medications he's on, he thinks that Layla is some sort of beautiful alien who is coming to take him away. And they kind of have this little interaction. Then, you know, she leaves him at the hospital and goes on with her life. But to Cal, you know, he was very fascinated by Layla, even though he could only remember her in bits and pieces. And a few weeks later, Cal realizes that he's going to have to participate in the annual sort of auction that is done as a fundraiser, where they auction off people in the fire department and in the police department who are either single or not engaged or married. Well, they're single. And they're auctioned off to bidders, and all the money benefits, you know, these various things around town. And last year, Cal participated because Cal does everything he can for his town. And his whole like goal in life is to take care of the citizens of Falls Creek. That's very, very important to him. So he wants to participate in the auction. But he had a horrible date last year with this very over-the-top woman who thinks that they're going to have another date because she is going to bid for him again. And Callum does not want to have any part of another date with this woman. And so he decides the only way he's going to get out of, you know, participating in this auction is to pretend to be engaged. And he decides that the newcomer to town, Layla, is the perfect woman for him to fake propose to. And through through a series of events, Layla eventually agrees to this sort of fake engagement. Partially because she needs a place to live. Things have happened around the apartment where she was staying, and now she needs a short-term sort of solution until she can move back into her apartment. And Cal volunteers to let her stay with him as long as then she will let the town believe that they are engaged and in love. And with some trepidation, Layla agrees to this, but she makes sure that, you know, Cal knows that this is never going to be like anything beyond like this fake engagement. She had her heart completely broken by another cop in her previous, where she used to live, and she's not interested in like, you know, revisiting that again. And Cal also has a lot of baggage, and she's not interested in helping him to deal with that. She just feels like that's not anything. She just wants to do her job and, you know, settle into the town. But as often happens in these fake relationship books, you know, the more time that they spend together, the more true feelings begin to grow. And the sort of line between reality and fiction begins to blur. And now there's so much more to the story than just the sort of like lighthearted fake relationship, small town, incredibly gossipy small town with the incredibly gossipy like ladies auxiliary. I don't think that's actually the name of them, but like there's something like a ladies society in town that, you know, spreads gossip at the speed of light. And, you know, there's a pig that runs away from its farm that has to be, you know, coaxed home, and like cows that walk on the road, and people that just don't know how to butt out of anyone else's business. But then there's this, you know, town that looks out for their own, and they support each other, and, you know, have this really great, very zany kind of relationship with each other. And that all makes it good. Then there's, you know, all of the past trauma that Cal has to work through, and Layla has to learn to trust her heart. Another really great part about this book is Layla's family. The way that when they're together, they kind of intersperse like Farsi in with English. They drink a lot of chai. They have a lot of really great, again, I feel like a broken record, but really beautiful descriptions of food. And all of these things kind of elevate a book from just being like your run-of-the-mill rom-com in a small town to something that feels really special and interesting. And again, with a really strong and authentic author voice that kind of also elevates it. So, and if you read an audio, this book was very, very perfectly narrated by the talented Samantha Brentmore, and then also new to me, Bryant Walker. And the two of them just did a really gorgeous job with just the accents of the book, and then the Farsi that's sort of sprinkled throughout, and just the emotion as well. So if you're looking for a rom-com with heat and heart and just all the good small town zany vibes, definitely pick up What Hurts Us by Maggie Gates. And again, it's Falls Creek Book One.
I have never heard of this. All right. So that brings us to the end of this episode of New to Us Women Authors. Thank you so much to Stacy, Brooke, and Natalia for joining me tonight. As always, thanks goes out to Christine for all of her fantastic editing. And of course, we thank each and every one of you so much for joining us each week as we talk about great books.
If you would like to let us know your thoughts, you can do that by leaving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform you use to access the show. And not only does it allow us to see your feedback, but it also helps other book lovers to find us, which is a great thing. So I will be back next Tuesday morning with more bookish fabulousness. And some number of us will be back on Friday with more discussion of great books. Take care, everybody.